a lot has happened under your tenure, your four-year tenure. I wanted to start with the No Child Left Behind waiver. That really changed the accountability system for the state. So can you talk a little bit about how things have changed since Georgia received the waiver?
Absolutely. And we were ecstatic to receive a waiver from No Child Left Behind. You know, I think as a career educator and a lot of educators out there, from the very beginning of No Child Left Behind, we saw the weaknesses in the legislation. It's a very good piece of legislation to begin the discussion around accountability, and it really prevented us from being able to hide behind averages and really forced us to disaggregate and look at subgroups, and that was very critical, and we kept that in our waiver. But it also allowed us to go beyond just a single test score. And so how that has really changed accountability for our schools and our districts is it's no longer just about the test score, but there are so many other things that teachers do and that schools do already to make sure students are successful that are folded into the accountability system. So now we're not just looking at did they pass the test, but we're looking at things like, are students reading on grade level by the end of the third grade? Are they reading on grade level by the end of the fifth grade? Are they reading on grade level by the end of the eighth grade? Are they reading at grade level by 11th grade? Because in the past, you might just worry about, are they reading on grade level by third? But if you don't keep them moving forward, are they going to be ready for the next level of education? So, you know, we have indicators in there for career readiness and what are we doing to help children be prepared for when they leave high school? So it's not just about the test score, but it's about everything that we do to make sure students are ready for the next level of education, whether it's going from elementary to middle, or middle to high, or high into college or careers.
Would you say that the new system, it's called the CCRPI, mm-hmm. would you say it's somewhat more supportive of schools? It seemed like under AYP, which was the old No Child Left Behind system, I think the perception among some schools and teachers was that it was a little bit punitive. Would you say that this is a little bit more school supportive?
Oh, absolutely. Because what we wanted to do was create an accountability system that would actually drive school improvement. So what schools have had to do in the past is they had an accountability model with No Child Left Behind, but then they would have a school improvement plan. They'd have a Title I plan. They would have this plan or that plan. And what we wanted to do was create an accountability system that they could use to frame and drive their school improvement efforts. So I think it is much more friendly to the districts and to individual schools, and it helps them guide their work.
Another thing that happened under your tenure, Georgia received the Race to the Top grant,
right.
$400 million. Half of it went to the state, half went to the 26 Race to the Top districts. Part of what it did, it helped build out the state's longitudinal data system. Mm-hmm. It also helped, or part of what took place under Race to the Top was the new teacher and leader evaluation system. How would you rate sort of the process of Race to the Top? I mean, was it good for the state? Are good things coming out of it? Could things have been done differently?
Well, just one quick point of clarification. The state actually received the grant under the previous administration.
Okay.
I inherited, as I came into it, the work of Race to the Top. So, but it has been valuable. What is important to know about Race to the Top is that many of the projects within the Race to the Top work, like the teacher and leader evaluation system, were already underway in Georgia. We were already working on redesigning those instruments for evaluation as just one example. And so it made, for the previous administration, it made sense to apply for that money. My concern at the beginning was there are always strings attached when you get large sums of money like that from Washington. And so my challenge coming in was to make sure that we implemented the grant with fidelity, and we completed the work, and we got the best product for Georgia, but also do it in a way that it was best for Georgia. And so, you know, we've had issues along the way with the U.S. Department of Education, specifically over the teacher and leader evaluation system. And most of that has come from the fact that when the grant was originally written, some of the folks who were doing the original work didn't have the experience in evaluating teachers and put some very aggressive timelines on the work. And for me, the work of evaluating teachers is far too important to rush through and not get right. And so we have we've slowed down the process to make sure that it actually gets done right the first time and we don't wind up in court or something like that. And so some of those efforts have been a little bit not perceived well by the U.S. Department of Education in that we haven't met the timelines that were originally set out. But, you know, that being said, those timelines were set by a different administration. I wouldn't have set those timelines because they were not they really weren't feasible from the original scope.
You would not have set those timelines from the beginning. I mean, right. And I know it might be easy to say looking back,
right.
You know, we wouldn't have set the timelines. But from the beginning, you think you wouldn't have set.
Right. Because, you know, when I first came into office and looking at the scope of work and looking at the way that the evaluation system was developed, I knew that there were issues from the beginning. And that's just based on my experience of evaluating teachers.
Got it. Where is the teacher evaluation system now? Is it ready to be fully implemented this upcoming school year?
Yes, we will have all of our districts on board with the evaluation system this year. You have a phase-in on the teacher effectiveness measure, which is a piece of the evaluation system, because really what you have is you have an evaluation system, but you also have the teacher effectiveness model and the leader effectiveness model, but they're different. And the effectiveness measure uses the evaluation results to generate an effectiveness measure, because where No Child Left Behind looked at only do you have a highly qualified teacher, our new system and our waiver is looking at an effective teacher, because what we have seen over time is that you can have a highly qualified teacher who's maybe not very effective in the classroom in moving the needle on student achievement. So the evaluation system is going to be in place in every district, but those effectiveness measures are going to be rolled out in a phased-in approach. All of our 26 Race to the Top districts will generate teacher effectiveness measures this year for every teacher in their building. Next year, you will have all districts generating an effectiveness measure for teachers of tested subjects. And then the following year in 16-17, every teacher in the state will have that effectiveness measure for every course taught.
Okay. And for classroom teachers, when we're talking about effectiveness measures, are we talking about student growth in terms of test scores?
Not only that, the effectiveness measure is a combination of the evaluation of the principal and the student growth in the classroom. And that was one of those things at the very beginning that I had concerns with, that we had to write some amendments of the original Race to the Top grant, because you had teachers of non-tested subjects who the formula for generating their effectiveness measure consisted of 60% of that would be based on the principal's evaluation and 40% of it was going to be based on student surveys. And that's just, you know, that was, to me, that's just unacceptable. And so we've changed that around, and we don't have student surveys any longer weighing as an individual piece of that effectiveness measure. They're still doing surveys, but the results of those surveys inform the principal's year-end evaluation, but they don't stand alone as a weight for the teacher evaluation piece.
Is that because you could get a sort of a skewed result maybe with...
You could. I've been a high school teacher, and I know that I have seen, let's say, teachers who, if it may be a ball game on a Friday night, and that Friday, you know, during the season, is always video day. And there's not a lot going on in that classroom on those particular days. And for those students in those classrooms, you know, that teacher may get a very good survey because they like the fact that this teacher... But then you have a teacher who has very high expectations and won't accept anything but a student's best, may not get the best evaluation from all students. But when you look at growth, that's why we're including growth in here, because bottom line is, are students growing? Are they making progress?
Another big policy that came in under your administration, although this decision, I believe, was also made before you came into the position, but the Common Core Georgia Performance Standards, the board adopted them in 2010. They went through sort of a fight in the legislature this year, but they're in place. They're what Georgia is using now. Some of the criticism has not only been surrounding the Common Core itself, but is this idea of local control and, you know, do the districts really have local control? Georgia adopted, it has its own stamp on there, the Common Core Georgia Performance Standards. Mm-hmm. Do the critics have a point, though? I mean, could there be more local control, or did the state do it right?
I've really got two answers for that. I don't think the state did the best job in the adoption process. They followed their own policies. They followed rule, and that was fine. I'm not taking away from that. I don't think the state did the best job communicating to districts in a timely fashion, you know, what was happening. The biggest concern for me at the time was that Georgia had just made a transition from the old QCC curriculum that we had to the Georgia Performance Standards. In fact, we had not even finished rolling out all of the math standards before we adopted a new set. And so that's not good for teachers, you know, or parents or students when you're constantly changing. So once we were here, you know, I want us to stay here for teachers' sakes, for students' sake. What I don't think people understand is that there has never been an ounce of control lost by a local school district because the state has always had standards. Before Common Core, we had the Georgia Performance Standards. You have a set of standards that are your benchmarks that you're asking your schools to make sure students get to. How you get there, the curriculum piece, has always been a local control. So how Atlanta Public School meets the standard can very well be very different than how Cobb County reaches that standard, and that can be very well different than Gwinnett or, you know, or Fulton or, you know, Schley County. It's completely left up to the control of the local school system, the curriculum, and the instructional resources that they use. I think a lot of the angst over the Common Core is people were more upset about instructional resources than they were standards.
And some said they were upset because of the idea of federal standards or national standards.
And they're not federal standards. There was no one in the federal government that had anything to do with writing these standards. I mean, it was the state superintendents in every state who came together and the governors who came together and said, let's get on the same page. And we had the best example here in Georgia of the reason why we need some common standards. And that was our move to integrated math that we did years ago. We were the only state in the country teaching math that way. And so when our students would go to another state or we would have students come in, our curriculum was non-portable. In other words, you couldn't go somewhere or we couldn't bring a student in without there being a loss of credit for some students or a loss of instructional time because we didn't teach algebra anymore in the ninth grade. We taught Math 1. And so you could have a student come in from another state that had had Algebra 1. They're going into the 10th grade. Well, where do we put them? We could put them in Math 2, which is your 10th grade course, but they would not have had the geometry and statistics standards in Math 1 that formed the foundation for Math 2 for them to be successful in Math 2. You could put them back in Math 1 to get that, but then they repeat all the algebra standards that they already took. It was just a mess. It was a nightmare. And so, you know, states said, you know, shouldn't Algebra 1 be the same in New York as it is in Georgia? You know, shouldn't we have some consistent expectations of our students? So the idea of a common set of standards is very good. We need to stay the course. When you look at Georgia's performance over the last several years, we rank higher in state history than we ever have in just about every indicator you can look at. And I think that's a result, a direct result of Georgia moving to more rigorous standards.
Which indicators? Can you give some examples?
SAT scores, we rank higher than we ever have in state history. ACT scores, advanced placement scores, we rank ninth in the nation in advanced placement scores. And we rank in the top five in the nation in growth in the NAEP, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. In fourth grade reading, we rank in 10-year growth fifth in the nation on that particular measure. We rank fifth in the nation in closing the gap for students of poverty in eighth grade mathematics. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we have a group of students that have now come up through several years of schooling under more rigorous standards who are performing at a higher level than ever before. Graduation rates. We graduated more seniors last year than we ever have in history.
You mentioned the issue with math. When you came into office, another thing that was difficult was the integrated math situation, and you made it so that schools could choose. They could teach discrete math if they wanted to go back to the old method. Math scores, despite the progress, you mentioned math scores have been a challenge. They've struggled a little. Do we have to catch up now in math?
We do, and this may be something that our predecessors really didn't plan on. in making that move to integrated mathematics, the teaching workforce was not prepared for that. Where you had a math teacher who taught, let's say, Algebra 1. They've taught Algebra 1 for 20, 25 years. They learned mathematics in a discrete fashion when they were in college. They've taught it in a discrete fashion for 20, 25 years. And all of the sudden, you change on them, and you're asking them to teach not only algebra, but you're asking them to teach geometry and statistics as they relate to algebra. And that became very challenging for a number of our teachers. Some of them did a great job. Some of them, they struggled, quite frankly. And the state, we didn't do a great job with training. You know, we rolled out 5 days of training over the summer, and I just don't think that that was effective. And so there were many issues that rolled into that. I think as we implement a new assessment coming this spring, we're seeing already, because we went through a redesign for the coordinate algebra test and the analytic geometry test for high school, and you see the low passage rates on those. That's because in the past, our standardized tests for this state have always been set at a basic skills minimum competency, and we are changing that to create tests that send an indicator of college and career readiness. And so because of that, you see those low passage rates. But already after 1 year, because we implemented coordinate algebra last year, this year you saw a 3 or 4 percentage gain in passage rates for algebra. So you have that initial implementation dip. We're changing what we're expecting students to do. When you and I learn math, and this is the best example, it's what we called plug and chug. You memorized a formula, and the teacher gave you 20 questions with solve for X, and it's you plug in the numbers and you solve for the equation. But now we're asking students to use math. We're giving them a problem and asking them to come up with the formula and the solution to solve the problem. So it's that age-old, why do I ever need to know this? We're giving students now the reasons to know, and it's a little bit of a change.
And so in order to kind of bridge that gap or to make sure that you see growth every year, what do teachers need to be doing now?
You know, I think if teachers can continue down that road of getting students to explain their reasoning, explain why a solution works. You know, you certainly understand that 2 times 2 is 4, but when you get into a word problem and you're trying to get them to explain why David had 4 apples, he gave 2 away, he has 2 left. Well, how does that work? I mean, I know 4 minus 2 is 2, but explain and show me how that works.